we'll see.
Okay, let's call this meeting to order on June 17th, 3 o'clock.
Is Mike on?
Did Mike call in, by the way?
We haven't heard from him yet.
Okay. Randy, would you give us a pledge of allegiance?
Sure.
Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is any update from Chad?
We don't have Chad, we don't have Bob.
Okay.
What about public comments? Any public comments?
There's nobody in Mesquite.
What about a motion to accept the agenda?
I'd make a motion to accept the agenda.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting on May 20th.
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes for the May 20th meeting.
Okay, got a motion?
I'll second it.
Got a second. Everybody in favor say aye of accepting the minutes.
Aye. Aye.
For chair's report, we've got a thank you letter here from Virgin Valley High School and the young people received scholarships there. That was quite an experience. Ellen and I spent 2.5 hours together, whether we liked it or not. Was one of those kids your relation?
No, no.
Wow.
My kids are way beyond that.
Okay. Well, I should have said grandkid, huh? Trevor Hopkins and Janet Werner.
Those are Moapin.
Janet Werner's not Moapin, is she? Mm-hmm. Isn't her dad a lawyer?
I know. I know her.
Okay.
She's from here. Hopkins is that.
Yeah, that'd be a long time. Joshua Linford. Dear Ms. Garcia, thanks for awarding me the scholarship. There you go.
Those are all blue, so those are going to be my last.
You figured it out, Rich.
Well, anyway, that's nice when they note that.
I read through those thank yous, and there is a young lady in there that said her dad works two jobs, and her mother has picked up a third job to help her go to college, and the money we gave is life-changing.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
Gosh, I finally put it away. I'm like, gosh, dang it, I can't be all teared up today. I got board meeting. I'll have to wait and read the rest tomorrow. But very, very nice. We got a lot of really sweet kids that wrote very nice things to us.
Yeah.
So makes you feel good.
The high school must have chipped together and bought the cards and told the kids to fill them out.
It's all, they all come on a one letter, and it has their letterhead, so yeah. Yeah.
I guess you'll talk about the trip to Portola.
Yes, and then you can fill in everything I forget.
I love it when the statewides get together, the NREA guys, you learn what everybody else is doing and how they would try to do it better or what they're doing. I don't know. I just love it. What about Mr. Attorney?
I don't have any report, but I can definitely answer any questions that the board may have.
Okay.
No question.
Well, kick the ball to your court, Lisa.
Okay, perfect. Let's start with safety first, and Kyle will kick us off.
Okay, for the month of May, our safety meeting, we had ESDI in-house again. Bruce was able to give us trainings on heat mitigation, 480-volt arc flash, and FR clothing. The heat mitigation, if you remember, January of 2025, Nevada State OSHA come out with new guidance, new rulings, Ultra Power. It was, quite honestly, it was pretty easy with our changes that we had to make, and our teams are doing extremely well with those. The 480-volt arc flash was a great topic because we've recently made some changes to our 480-volt practices in-house, just following the data that the 2025 arc flash had given us. And we had 56 attendees that day.
Oh. I was glad to say I was in Overton and saw that they were working right there by the restaurant. Yeah. And they had a big shade over the top of them.
It's pretty simple technology, and it definitely helps, right? Get that sun off you. So. We also had training this month with Double J Industrial. His name is Jason Strickland. He's from town here. He lives up by the airport. But he's been doing all of our crane certifications, rigging certifications, and all that qualified persons training for our staff for a number of years now. It's incredible that we have this level of trainers in town that can give us this. He travels throughout the whole entire West from Montana to Arizona, California, to clear to Colorado giving these trainings, but he's local. It's awesome to have him right here. He trained 18 of our employees over two different days, so 9 one day, 9 the next. Outage report for the month of May, we had 4 unplanned outages and 16 planned outages. The top one, number 6 there, is it says poles damaged by fire, but that was the it was categorized incorrectly. We've since fixed that, but that was the pole that blew over in that storm just prior to last month's board meeting. To note everything else, it was kind of just minor. Down there, another line number 16, that Warm Springs area, we had another animal, we assume. The power went off at 9:19 p.m. The men rolled as soon as they could, but obviously by the time they get up there and travel that entire length of line, hour and a half long, never did find what caused that. Us and the subs teams and the engineering department are looking at technology to put up there to help narrow down that scope when we do have those outages in the future. So. Service installations for the month of June, we had a I might have to move my thing there. I can't remember. It's 20, I think it's 23 residential and 0 commercial. Thank you, Merlin. Yes. So, good number of residential for the month. This brings our annual total up to 138 for the year. For jobs, I think it was board meeting day. Last month, we had that fire going through the Virgin Valley area. Our efforts, you see on the right there, for the vegetation management with the sterilant we spray, the weed killer, and then also just the brushing, our lines did incredibly well. There was no worry, no major concern with our lines while that fire moved through that area. On the left there, you see some of the staff, though. They took it as an opportunity to go down into the river. There was, you know, near the Bunkerville Bridge, there was a couple of cottonwood trees that are they're growing fast, and maybe they're just a little bit outside of our right-of-way, but this was a great opportunity to go in there and clear those out of there. So appreciate it.
Really, really, really close to our right.
Oh, it was in it. Okay. But they were growing out, growing towards us, yep.
Perfect time.
Yeah, it was a great time to get those taken care of.
Will you just speak that you did de-energize that line, though?
Yeah, we did, safety? In fact. Yeah, we had manpower on site the entire time that fire was going. You know, I know Randy was there as well. So we had men stationed to that I was communicating through all day long. But then in preparations for that, we did de-energize every line that we could, just knowing that the aerial response to that would be safest for that staff and everybody that was fighting that fire. So it's great to work with them, and our staff was easily able to switch that power around and get it de-energized. If you've traveled around Mesquite recently down the Sand Hills Boulevard, you see our teams upgrading that underground section through Big O.
Maverick.
Yeah, but what's the sandwich shop just to the north? It's not Jimmy Jones, is it?
Oh.
Jersey Mike's. There you go. Jersey Mike's south, clear to Maverick. But they're doing a lot of infrastructure upgrade there, making good progress. This just shows you on the left the amount of conductor inside those vaults, and on the right, the cleanup that it takes sometimes to get in there before you can even start pulling wires. So staff has been busy there in Mesquite. Another one of your awnings that you pointed out, the Mesquite team, with the heat mitigation, same thing. You know, it's easy to pop up a shade over top of those de-energized points and do all their terminating. They'll be there for hours. Pretty simple. Just get a little shade on you. On the right, you can see them using the high voltage tester or phaser. I'm not sure exactly which one it is, but just the technology that we have in order to prove that wire and make it ready for energization. Overton, on the left, you see just a couple of good pictures I found from the folder of the jobs they've been doing. On the left, they're doing the same kind of project, overhead to underground, infrastructure updating here in the Overton substation area. On the right, down at an old pit down here below town, a loader got a little close to a pole and bumped it over. I was going to showcase this little piece of equipment that we were able to get on loan from a supplier. It's made by Beer Tools. In the past, it took three different pieces of equipment to do what this one tool will do. So this one tool will test voltage from 50 volts all the way to 999 kV. So from the lowest voltage all the way higher than what we have for transmission. It's incredible. So fantastic piece of equipment with great technology, and you know, moving forward, if we need replacements or new piece of equipment, we'll definitely purchase this. So, any questions or comments?
Thank you, Kyle. All right, Randall is absent today as he is attending the CRETA meeting in my place. And so Brett and Eldon will be tag-teaming that report, and we'll start with Brett.
Okay. So some of the major projects that we have built that were happening in our district, the Overton crew went out and installed the underbuild on the new transmission line. So they installed the new distribution underneath the new transmission line between structures 73 and 76. We got that all tied back into the existing distribution line, so that could be powered up whenever needed right now. This is structure 23, Hunt Electric, which was, they're no longer Hunt Electric, it's called Comfort Solutions. Another company purchased them. But this photo right here is showing where, you know, they're setting up all the conductors out there, getting ready to pull in through the corridor. The corridor area, they're there this whole week also. So the right here kind of shows some of the safety issues, safety things that they set up prior to pulling conductor. So on this, that's structure 23 in the background, and we go over our energized 138 line to structure 24, come down structure 24, and under the big transmission lines out there in the corridor. So it's interesting. It's very interesting watching those guys work out there on how this is all implemented. We have, right now, they have conductor pulled on the new transmission line from structure 2 to structure 23, and then from structure 72 to structure 248, just outside the Hewlett substation. So they're working on, they're getting close in my eyes.
Are some of those lines active?
Just the distribution lines underneath the transmission line. Going up from Gila to the top of the mesa. And we can re-energize the distribution all the way across the mesa if need be.
Dell, are you talking about in this picture?
Yeah.
Yeah, in this picture, yeah, oh. They're all energized, except for the one they're pulling.
Yeah, so the big 500 kV and the millivolt and the, our 138 line, so they're kind of like going through the eyelets of a shoe. So, a lot of safety out there. So, that's my presentation. Do you have any questions for...
So, what do they have left to pull in? Have they pulled from the north side of the freeway all the way down?
They have crossed I-15.
Yeah, but they ended right on the north side of I-15.
Yes, they ended at Structure 72. They still need, they think they have some static wires up. They need to go from there over to the edge of the mesa, Structure 60. It's on very hanging on the edge of the mesa, all the way back down to Structure 30. So,
are we looking at, are we going to be able to energize that line?
We're, they're shooting for September.
Oh.
So August, September, we're...
Do you want to speak on that or you want
to? You have to do a lot of testing.
So the line portion should be done by the end of June, early July. And then there is the...
contractor working inside the sub to tie that in. And there's a lot of equipment that's got to be installed in the sub.
Okay.
So the substation work will be completed until September.
In Tortoise.
And then still think of September.
That's for it all to be hotted, but right. the transmission line install should be done by the end of this month or very early July. And then it's just tying it all together to in the substation.
Yeah.
And then they already shipped the
transformer.
The transformer.
Transformer.
The breakers. Yeah. The breakers and
the
all
new
the equipment.
Transformer.
The new transformer comes in October, November, but we don't need that to energize. So.
Oh, you don't.
No. But we do have three breakers to install, and this is all being done by Hunt also. I believe it's Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be doing that work in that substation too, but they've got three breakers and a bunch of equipment to install in there first before we can energize. So quite a bit of work.
Okay, Eldon.
All right. Give you a little what we're doing in the corner of NERC. So I think last month Randall reported that we're around 80%. We've since submitted two policies to WEC, so now we're around 85%. The NERC registration that we got our extension on is, we have an additional meeting that we NERC wants us to have with WEC, and so that'll be with to report our progress and then to review are completed policies that we've submitted. They want to go through each policy, make sure we're not missing anything and we're kind of on track. And then we have PRC 27, which is our next policy that we are going to submit, but that needs to be, needs to go through our engineering consultant. We have so it's expected to be completed by the end of summer, and the quote we were given was $80,000 for PRC 27.
It was originally,
I believe,
$150,000?
Yeah, so the original was for PRC 23, 26, and 27, and that was $140,000 for those three policies, but we've since eliminated 23 and 26, so now it's just PRC 27.
So Eldon and Randall worked really hard to get all of the extension submitted, and they said we will allow you an extension, but now every month you have to have an additional meeting. So we have two meetings a month with APCO, and then one meeting with APCO, Lincoln, and WEC, and now Eldon gets an additional meeting with WEC to go over what we didn't talk about in the other meetings that we had with WEC. So,
which I think is good because they are going, it's almost going to be like a small audit, kind of. We're going to go through our policy and everything we didn't talk about. And so if if we're missing the mark on something, they're going to let us know. So I think it's good.
I love your positivity. You keep that up.
Does every utility have to go through the same process? Is there sharing?
We're very unique in that we are doing this after the fact. So you do have to go through a policy. You do have to go through a process to become compliant. But typically you do that before any generation enters your service territory. And so this is a very unique situation. But they've been good to work with us through it. So, but are they 100% uniform? I don't know. This is our first time. So. All right, thank you very much, Eldon. Next, we'll go to substations.
Okay. Do we have a clicker?
I guess you could advance me, but...
Come on down.
All right. The Long Drive Switchyard is now in service. So the in-service date was 5/28, so we hit our deadline on that. The only thing that's not energized is the Raptor substation. We still have some work to do in Raptor substation before we can energize that. But we're hoping to have that online within, well, the middle of next month is where we hope to have that online.
So did we get any, you know, complaints from the neighbors, you know, after it was all, did that kind of all just kind of go away?
For the most part, we had a gal that... apparently, when the sun hits that bus just right, it reflects down and shines right into her windows.
Oh.
And it is legitimate. Her complaint is legitimate. So we've done some remediation to help with that.
It's not a lot we can do to make the bus not shiny. It's all aluminum, you know, but we'll see what we can do to get something covered up. But, Arrowhead and Falcon substation transformers. We had crew from Virginia Transformers in dressing and testing those for the last couple of weeks, dressing, testing, and filling. They are almost done with the testing part, so they're all dressed and everything's good. The crew's been very professional that came down. They were upfront about problems that they had, and they corrected those or are in they're in the process of getting that corrected. So when it's all done, we'll have a pretty good product, I feel. And Virginia's really upped their game as far as quality and making sure the customers have what they need and are, you know, making sure quality's there.
Is that 2x4 so it doesn't tip over or what?
It is, yeah. That picture was taken before they had the supports on there, so
we were showing fun. That's what happened.
Yeah. The metal bar, you know, they didn't have
Yeah.
And here's a few pictures of the one on the left is Falcon Ridge Transformer, the one on the right is Arrowhead's Transformer. So there's quite a bit of difference in the two. The big difference is that the Arrowhead, the bushing comes out the side and it goes underground. So there'll be no distribution coming out of the Arrowhead transformer, which is the one on the right. It goes all underground into the building. Whereas the Falcon Ridge will come up and then onto a bus work outside, external. And another angle. The size of the one on the right, the Arrowhead, was it's massive compared to the one on the left. I mean, not massive. There's a noticeable difference between the two, and I'm pretty sure it's because the bushings are sideways. And there's a LTC on the one at Arrowhead, too. But all in all, I'm quite pleased with them. So Arrowhead, I know I told you I wasn't going to update on Arrowhead, but we've had progress on Arrowhead. The engineering drawings have gone to the 90% approval stage, and we've worked through a few different changes there, and we feel like we've got a pretty good working model now of that substation. The building plans have just approved through their stages of final. They're going into production, so the building will start going into production now. Company named TAP was awarded our T lines, our transmission line structures. And because of all the transmission line projects that are going on in the U.S., every transmission line manufacturer has told us there's a huge waiting list and you're going to be 85 plus weeks out. And so because of that, it's pushed our project back. So we're looking at quarter three or quarter four of 2027. Instead of being on in the summer of 27, it's going to be after the summer because these poles have pushed us out. Another bad thing about that is those transmission lines have more than doubled in price. So what I planned on for the entire steel package, these transmission poles took up that entire steel package price. So it's kind of a bummer there, but you know, you got to do what you got to do, and we need the poles. So
the other thing that I think, I mean, this is only a few months, but this is just the start of us seeing the issues with receiving parts and pieces for transmission and generation. I mean, that's becoming nationwide. And so the longer that those things are pushed out, the more expensive the rest of the costs are too. And we'll see that nationwide.
We had a company, just kind of a side note, we had a company come to me and say, hey, I can get you transmission poles. And we put them in our bid. We had like five companies we put out to bid on these structures. And they came back with just as long lead time and more cost than the others. And they were trying to prime us to get our business. So that just tells you all of these transmission pole providers are very busy. I threw the picture in on the right. Just that's the footprint of the new Arrowhead substation. So you can see it's pretty busy there, and we don't even have distribution on that. That distribution goes straight into the building where the switchgear's at. So that's a small footprint for that substation. Oh, going the wrong way. So Aaron, Shane, and myself, we attended the ION Users Conference this year, and it was held in Scottsdale, Arizona. There was only four utilities there, APS, SRP, NV Energy, and us. So we're like the little guys amongst the big guys. But it was a great opportunity for us. I threw in there, the ION meters are power quality meters we use in our substations. They're a high-end meter, and we use those for a lot of event recordings, analytics, and stuff like that. You just can't get out of the revenue meter. Where these meters and the software that goes along with these meters, it's amazing what they can do, and we're only scratching the surface of the capacity of that system. So through this class, we decided we're going to have to schedule some training, some in-person training, to have them come in and help us to optimize our system so that we can get more out of it. And then also the networking that we had, especially with NV Energy. We've got some projects through NV Energy that we read meters for them and they read meters for us. With this networking and in contact with NV Energy, we're able to hopefully go through and we'll be able to read the meters we need to read on our own without having them read it and send it to us, and vice versa. They'll read ours, and that way we don't have to rely on them. They don't have to rely on us. So some really good, valuable contacts we made during that meeting. So I know that they cost us money to go to these in-person ones, but you just don't get that networking off of the conference call that you do with the in-person. It's just so much better in person. Going the wrong way again. Any questions?
Okay, thank you, Kevin. All right. Scott is off for a couple of weeks, so Merlin is going to fill in and do the administrative services for us today.
Yes, Stephen and Scott are gone. This is
yay
Scott's.
For not calling in sick.
Yes. This is Scott's extensive, his quarterly report. It includes a little more, including the social media outreach. I'll try and get through it quick, but if you want to stop or if you have questions, just ask and we'll stop in a bit. At a slide. This is cybersecurity training. We've had over the quarter 100% until May. And items on the right are the topics that we've covered in our online training for cybersecurity. Internal phishing results, apparently April and May last year and this year are our weak months because we've caught two employees at each month with our phishing emails that we send out to try and catch them. This is our email spam and our sent. Our trend is pretty constant over the few months of emails going in and out. And our firewall blocks by country. Europe is our biggest hit on these, all the European countries here. Server uptime is 100%. Our data backup and restore has been 100%. And this is the EISAC emails sharing cybersecurity responses across utilities. We've had around 100-115 on average most months. And these are some of the top three threats that we're facing. A lot of it includes just exploiting employees, exploiting our people, and we're trying to stay on training with, you know, what's happening out there. From customer service, this is the automatic bill payment that we're trying to get customers to be part of. This is addition, so the green is this year, the blue is last year. We've had more last year than we've had recently. But these are increases. So if we go to the next slide, our totals are increasing. That's the total, around 1,000, a little over 1,000 on that program. New customers on e-bill, we're averaging 65 to 70. And total electronic bill also increasing as we're adding more employees and more people to the e-bill program. The number of calls, it shows that it's increasing this year. However, the total trend is down from last year's. Last year's in the green. So we're having fewer customers call into the office compared to last year.
Any idea why?
Christy, any idea why?
It's because we're doing a fantastic job. No. We start getting more phone calls, I think, in the summertime because of high bill complaints. But for the most part, with the portal, people being able to see their bills online, being able to track their usage online, more people are getting more technical and using our online options instead of calling the office.
I also think that when you look at the weather, you see the two transitionary periods where we get a lot of wind, and so that typically translates to outages. And so when we have a long-term outage or a longer-term outage, then we get a lot more calls. Yeah. And so that's, I think, part of it as well. But for the most part, I agree with Christy. People aren't calling in as much because we have too many other ways that's easy to reach us.
Our average wait time on the phone is 7 seconds, and our average call is about 2.5 minutes. This has been consistent over the years. So our total walk-in customers, which has also decreased from last year. Our 2026 is in blue. And onto our social media communications. This is our Instagram. The number of new followers that have been added to the platform is 30 in May and 44 in April. These are the totals. We're having about 4,000. This is the total people that have interacted or seen something on Instagram from off of our OPD Instagram page. So you can see in the outage, people want to know what's going on. That number will be a lot bigger in those months.
That was our viral post on training video. Yes.
Very good.
We posted a video on doing a training at the local school. It was the Moab Valley School, right?
Yes.
Of Michael Abbott, and he was rappelling out of the bucket, and that thing went viral. And look at all the hits that we got.
That's 256,000. That's a big number. This is the Facebook, number of Facebook posts. We're doing about 30 posts a month. I think Facebook is our biggest platform, right, Christy?
Yes.
New followers, we're getting 15 to 20 a month. And this is our Facebook outreach. Again, in February, that must be the video that went viral. We're having around, on normal months, around 10,000 people that see or interact with our posts in one way or another on that platform.
That's pretty amazing, right? 10,000 people?
That's our total Facebook followers. We're about 4,500 on Facebook. This is the last slide. This is our website analytics, total people that are visiting our site, and some of the pages that they visit. Obviously, the landing page or the home page. There's a power article, and then they're looking for a payment option and applications. And that concludes the administrative presentation. Are there any more questions?
Thank you, Merlin. That was great. All right, let's head to Jonathan at finance.
All right. We had a favorable month for May. I don't know if you remember last month we talked about we budgeted to lose around $50,000, but we're happy to report that we had a net margin of just over $200,000 down on the line 29 down at the bottom right. But with that, we had a little higher than budgeted revenues for our power revenues at on line one, 4.48 million. And then our cost of purchase power was also down, which has been consistent. This year so far, with the exception of January, we've had February, March, April, and May, where we've had more hydropower than we were anticipating, and a little more solar than we were anticipating. So those power costs have been down, which is the main factor of why our margins have been higher, and all the rest of our costs have been within budget or slightly below. So
is that the new trend? That we can expect higher margins because our costs are lower.
No,
it's just a few months in a row. Good luck.
So I don't want to speak too much on that.
Okay.
You will not be held.
I would love that to be the trend, but we shall see. With the power cost, so we've had our issues with the with our solar provider, but the cost for our solar is extremely low compared to even our hydro. It's very similar in cost, but with our purchase power agreement with Tenasca, I mean, if we went to go try and get solar now, I don't know what the cost would be now, but it would be
far higher than what we're paying at $34.70 a megawatt for solar. The market is much, much higher now.
With the extra solar and hydro, we had any trouble staying within our bandwidth?
Nope.
With Tenasca?
No. Okay. But our hydro, we have had favorable hydro because of layoff, but the lake levels and the hydrology on the river are becoming more and more dire. And one of the things, I'm sorry if I'm stealing some of your thunder on the power cost. Okay. You can tell me, be quiet. This is your realm now. I don't know if I'll listen, but you can tell me. So one of the things that we're seeing on our hydropower now is that all of our administrative costs used to be based on hydrology. So you paid a cost per kWh that you received well, nobody's receiving any hydro, so they're not making the administrative fees. So now they've come back and said, we have a flat administrative fee starting, was that last month, that they had to rectify that, or they voted on it on their board meeting then. And so our admin fees are going up. We're not getting more power, but our costs are going up. And so I'll talk a little bit more about what some of the things that are happening with Creta on that, but they continue to ship cold water, or consider shipping cold water down the river to stave off the bass and not worry about the hydropower that people in the communities need. So we've been, I'll just say it now and skip it in my report. Creta reached out to me and asked that I join their legislative group. And so their legislative committee. And I agreed to that on a Friday. And Jack and I were on our way to Reno in the airport. And I got an all call from Creta saying, we need help. Please reach out to your legislators. They're making decisions on passing along costs for administrative fees and other things that are going to then be piled on in addition to for our hydropower customers. And so I called Vernon and said, I hate to do this at the very last minute, but can you draft a letter to Cortez Masto for me so that we can send this on? And I worked very hard at going to the Starbucks and getting myself a coffee. And when I came back, the letter was done. He had put my signature on it. I approved it, and off it went to Cortez Masto. And then about 30 minutes later, I got an amazing thank you from the federal lobbyist for Creta saying, your letter was absolutely amazing and thank you for doing it so fast. And I'm like, that wasn't me, that was my staff, he signed it for me, but you're welcome. So what my point of that is, we're going to continue to see that what we have to replace on our hydropower, which is between $24 and $34, will all be replaced with Tenasca, which is at $88 for our megawatt. It's inevitable. But the piece that we're really seeing the benefit from, if you remember in 25, we did not have solar come on until July. It was on the last day of June. So we had 6 months. That cost us just over $2 million, and now we're reaping that benefit now. So that's a big part of it.
The other cost, it's not going to change this year, the rate, but it will any more this year. But last year, our transmission costs through Indian Energy, since we had the additional, the correct terms, but we got the two regardener lines, and since we're a transmission owner and operator anyway, it put us in a higher classification, more in our transmission costs more. But we still have a reduction in our transmission costs. We had a 20 megawatt reduction every month, but that reduction is being phased out at 5 megawatts a year. So this year it's last year was 20, this year it's 50 or 15. So then it's phasing out to 10 and 5 and 0. So those transmission costs are going to go up each year also. So.
That was a part of our negotiated agreement that we did with them building RG2, was that then we would become a NITS customer, and so they had a 5-year transitionary period. So all of the free transmission that we got as a result of our tri-party agreement with Lincoln County and NV Energy, we lost that, but they gave us 5 years of transitioning pieces away of that free transmission, and so we're on year 3. And so eventually, every year that's going to, we're going to lose that free transmission, so we have to pay that much more in those transmission fees. In addition to that, when we became a NITS customer, originally we argued with them when they did their first big transmission project, and I can't recall the name of it. It's the one with the V-shaped poles. They wanted to lump us into that, and Mendes fought against that and said, we received no benefit from that. That north-south connection did nothing for us. And so we were only billed on the south end transmission. When we became a NITS customer, we were lumped into the entire thing, which is that much more expensive. So all of that to be said, power costs are slowly creeping up.
Okay, and on the balance sheet, we're still continuing to build and to grow our line five net utility plant. We have a value of 169, almost 170 million. Then our line 8, investment in associated organizations, line 15, cash, and line 18, temporary investments, also very liquid. And then our line 23, materials and supplies. This month we do a mid-year inventory, and that's going on right now. So we don't do any reconciliation. We don't do any adjustments, but we do it mid-year to see where we're at on track for December. And that was going on with our new work order clerk, Heather, and our warehouseman, and everything was going well and seems to be very, very accurate. So happy to report that. And then our line 29 total assets, so OPD's worth almost $197 million. Now that on our liability and equity side, line 36, we own $135 million of that. Long-term debt, line 43, and then our accounts payable, line 48, and totaling our liabilities and equities of almost $197 million. So
come on, Kevin.
Going the wrong way. Kevin.
Hope you can go the right direction.
Kevin, start the trend. Okay, equity as a percentage of assets, still very high, 68.66%. Our times interest earned ratio, it's a year-to-date 4.7. Modified debt service coverage, and this is with estimates through the end of the year, 2.18. Again, our margins are higher, so we're slightly above where our goal is. So we'll see how the margins go throughout the end of the year, but I think it should continue to be close to what it is. Then our cash, there in the middle, we had a monthly ending cash balance in our checking accounts of $4.2 million. In our Morton account there in the lower middle, $5.6 million, and then our Goldman account, $857,000. And the two graphs for where those securities in our Morton account, meter and Morton combined. I mentioned that last year, so it's our meter account. So securities in the pie graph by type, and then duration and the bar graph. And then you can see here each of our securities listed out here, and almost all of them are in CDs below the FDIC limits. So all federally insured. As of May 31st, OPD, we have a total of 19,292 customers. We had an increase, and there were some questions last month about how we had a decrease. And it's pretty historically, that's what happens during this time of year, and then go back up. So we had 39, I don't know if you can read that, but 39 total customers. So our connection fees are, this is similar to what it was last year. Again, the April 1, we had the large customer there on Mesquite Boulevard, but again, this was similar flip-flop basically from 2025 or April, May, but 27 customers, right at $26,000 in connection fees. Current billing arrangements, this is has gone up, which has been the case, but compared to last year, we are quite a bit lower than last year. So we had 33 residential customers, $4,539 and one commercial customer, $102. Again, grateful for all of our customers that contribute to our Roundup program, to both of the high schools in our valleys. And then our loans here with CFC, these are our totals and the details for those. This is our last quarterly payment. And in June, we will have at the end of this month, we'll have another payment, which is due to be slightly different than that, but scheduled to be made on time and paid in full. There was a little bit of a delay in the loan application with paperwork, and so we're still getting that squared out, squared away from our May or our April 15th meeting. That hasn't been finalized, but that's really close to being finalized for the additional $36 million for the loan pre-approval. And then our revenues and KWH by customer class here. Can't really see it here, but on line 9 there with our station power, actually added another customer just to bring this up. They're not really a customer, but we provided power to Dixie Power in the Virgin Valley, but in the Arizona area in Scenic Littlefield. For the month of May, this was a handshake agreement. We've got a really good relationship with them, and basically we worked through Tenasca and provided them power basically at our cost was the agreement. So because we've had a great relationship with them from current and past leadership here at OPD and with Dixie Power, so. See if I had any questions about that. We have estimates still. We have got our bills from Tenasca of what that what those exactly are, but we will see the invoice and then turn around and give that to Dixie Power. So, and then our averages there, monthly cost for May. 6.21 cents per kWh monthly revenue, 12.77, and our 2026 average cost per kWh is 6.71 cents. So, and that's my report, unless you have any questions.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Okay.
I met with the city manager and had a very good discussion with her. She is somebody that I look forward to working with in the future. We talked about some joint leadership training and using economy of scale of bringing in facilitators and educators, and then having the city staff and Overton Power. I'd like to invite the water companies as well, because we're all training up leaders and supervisors, and she was very she liked that idea. I also talked to her about doing some lunch and learns with our executive staff in our building and bringing her executives over, and so we're going to work together on that. I also discussed with her the will you change it to the next? Will you advance it one more
I'm
slide?
Sorry.
That's okay. I just got one slide, so that's fine. I discussed with her large loads coming into the service territory and into the city limits of Mesquite, what that looks like for Overton Power, and why it is so vital that we as an entity are at all of those meetings and a part of those conversations, and she was very accepting, and so I look forward to working with her in the future. Jack and I attended the NREA meeting in Portola last week. We had two interesting guests, and it was quite interesting that they both joined us on at the same meeting. First, we had Tammy Cordova, who is a PUCN commissioner. And then we had Brandon Barkoff from the CEO of NV Energy. And they joked, they jokingly said it, but the reality was both of them said that they would exit the room while the other spoke originally, but they did stay in the room. And there was a little bit of tension, but it was, I felt like good-hearted. And so one of the things that I thought was interesting that Ms. Cordova talked about was that the PUCN is evaluating their role in wildfire mitigation and data centers coming to Nevada. And so I pressed her a little bit on that, like, what is the PUC's role in that? And what do they see where they fit in the dynamics of that? So... She said that there, she gave me a very polite answer, which I think kind of sidestepped a lot of what I was asking her, but essentially it is ensure, their responsibility is to ensure that if NV Energy, who is under their purview, if data centers are going to come into the state, that they're ensuring that NV Energy takes care of all current customers, that those costs are taken, are borne by the data center or large industrial load. Brandon then talked about, and they, the other thing that she talked about was on wildfire. NV Energy is required to submit their wildfire mitigation reports to the PUC. Overton Power is not. None of the NREA members fall under the PUCN, and so she talked about that review and what it is that they do. We have our own wildfire mitigation plans, but we just do not submit them to the PUC. You, as our Board of Trustees, are the people who are responsible for ensuring that we have those mitigation plans in place. When Brandon talked, he spoke on, they had just done their new IRP, and he spoke on data centers in the state, and that they are ensuring that all data centers that want to come to our state pay every piece of what it is that they need. And so when he got done with his presentation, he talked on how many megawatts they are adding of battery solar and some gas peakers into their IRP to meet these needs. He did not speak on the geothermal that they're working on with Google. But so the thing that I pressed him on, though, was capacity. And where does he see this, and how is he protecting his current customers from capacity? Is these large data centers that are going to come in and use up the capacity across the state, are they going to put in transmission too? And I told him, we're building a transmission line right now, and it took us 8 years to get through permitting. They're going to wait that length of time, or they have a magic bullet that's going to get them through the permitting process. He assured us that they have to pay for generation, transmission, that there would be no harm to any current customers. We are going to hold him to that, and it is on record that he said that. So we'll see how that goes. He's actually a very nice man, and I had, you know, met with him before, and so we had a nice chat, and I followed up with an email to him because I want to stay in communication with this. As we work through the developments that are wanting to come into our service territory, I understand that we have to do studies and we have to worry about that capacity. But my concern is, and what I brought up to him that day is, what about the smaller entities? What about another 5 megawatt or a 10 megawatt? As we start to grow, how do we ensure that 15 years from now, the capacity isn't going to be used up because they're adding giga centers up in northern Nevada? And so that's something that we need to worry about. Their IRP showed that they have 4,500 megawatts of new renewable energy, 5,400 megawatts of battery storage, and 1,200 megawatts of natural gas that they're adding, that was just put through the PUC for their IRP. So we'll continue to work on that relationship with NV Energy. I know that it's very important, and Kevin spoke on this. One of the things that we see when we're on calls with them is that their staff is ever changing. That, you know, we get to know a name, we get to know a person that's in there, and then the next time we're on a call, they don't work there anymore. Right now we're dealing with a solar developer that was the head of the transmission at NV Energy, is now representing the solar. And so she asked me, who do you want to talk to from the metering department? And I said, I don't know. It's a turnstile of employees. So you tell us who we should be talking to at NV Energy. So I think it's important what Kevin said about going and making that networking and making those connections and trying to keep that relationship up. And that concludes my report, unless I can answer any questions for you guys.
Okay. Let's go on then with letter I, review and possible approval of our application for service policy.
Okay. This policy was last approved in 2010. I made some grammatical changes as well as some minor changes to the policy so that it's consistent with our current policies. This policy I did send to Byron. One change that we have made is that Christie's staff went through and redid our application for service. It still met all of the requirements that are within the policy, but they also did it in Spanish for all of our Spanish-speaking customers, which is really good for them. And so Byron has signed off and given approval, and he didn't have any changes to the policy. His only thing was that he thought we should give a little bit better information on the Roundup program on the application because they're checking that they want to do it. And so it doesn't really say what it is. We explain it to them, but it's not in writing. And so we tell them as they're doing the application, but they're signing for it, so we'll clarify that on the application. But you don't need to approve that tonight. You're just approving the policy.
Okay. Got the background here. Is there any further discussion? What about a motion to accept?
I'll make a motion that we approve the application for service policy OPD S04.201 as presented.
Oh, very good. Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we got a motion. We got a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Say. All right. J, review and possible approval of OPD donations policy, possible action.
Okay, this policy has not been updated since 2008. You will see in the red line version of this that I actually made no change. The only thing I made to the donation policy was the changing of the header and the information of when it was last updated, but the dialogue in the donation is just these two lines, and I did not change that. That's open for discussion if you guys want to change it. If I'm being honest, the reason that I brought this to you is that I propose no change to it, but if we approve this policy tonight, we've went through all of the administrative policies and they're up to date, and so I just wanted to get it done.
Any further discussion on donation policy? Okay, we're looking for a motion then. Item J.
New motion, Gary Rich.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve donation policy OPD A07.101 as presented.
Okay, we got a second.
Second.
Okay, we got a motion and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Say okay. Discussion of mutual aid agreements. Oh, this is discussion only.
This is for discussion only. And I asked Kyle, at this time of year, it's always important we talk about our mutual aid, and I thought it would be good for him to give you guys an update, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Okay, very good.
Will you pull up my presentation there, Merlin? If you weren't aware, our mutual aid agreements, we have two that we're in agreement with other utilities with Overton Power District. The IPSA is the first one, which is our apprenticeship group. That's mostly throughout Utah, Idaho, some of Arizona. It's about 33 different partners there. And then NREA is our other mutual aid agreement that we have in place. And what a mutual aid agreement really is a pact with these different utilities that's predetermined, pre-discussed, and annually discussed and updated, that in the moment of a emergency response, you don't have to worry about covering all the who's going to pay for labor, who's going to pay for truck time, who's going to pay for material, all of those pieces of the puzzle. So they've already been solved in these agreements that we have in place. We are fortunate at Overton Power District, knock on wood, you know, we don't want to have to call on these mutual aid agreements, but there's others that do annually. Like, I was thinking back, you know, Garcane Power, stretch from Kanab, clear up to Fish Lake, Loa, all through this center, south central part of Utah. And they've had wildfire after wildfire after wildfire. And they're a large company, but they still aren't staffed enough or equipped enough to be able to handle that all themselves. So they rely on good neighbors like us when the moment calls that they already have, that they have this agreement in place, and they can call on us and say, hey, we need six linemen and three bucket trucks and two digger derricks. And it's not a negotiation then of who's paying for what. It's, we'll get you there as soon as possible, and we understand that since you signed this agreement, that we can count on you, that you're going to bill us just for what's predetermined of that.
Do you guys ever, like, annually, once a year, meet with those groups, Garcane, Dixie, et cetera? Do you, I mean, as far as staff, having the agreements are one thing, getting to know staff and accommodating personally. I think you mentioned, Kevin, that when you go to these, whether it's an online thing or in-person thing, yeah, you know, I think it's important to make sure you...
100%. You're yeah, still in my thunder a little bit because, like, oh, Kevin said, those networking events yeah, are so important. Me and my supervisors go to the IPSA meetings every summer. They're held throughout the summer, June, July, and September. And quite honestly, you can do them virtually. You know, there is an option for that, but it's so important to go up there and just get the connections, get the relationships built, so it's not foreign when you need to call on them. If it's for outage restoration, or if it's for materials, or if it's... So often I call on partners like that for guidance in what their procedures are, what their safe work practices are. So
like those once a year type of thing, or how does that...
Yeah, it's mostly in the summertime, yes, but yeah, because that IPSA group anyways is through the summertime. But then NRA is the same way, right? You just hear Melissa talk about their meeting, and they go up there and have these quarterly meetings. It's the same,
same purpose. That personal relationship is...
Absolutely.
I think it'd be a must.
It's huge. Yeah, absolutely.
Do we still host the IPSA in February when they come down?
March, yeah.
Annual
yeah,
meeting?
Yeah, we sure do. Yep. And that's a great tool, right? Like, it's definitely a burden for our staff, but it's a great time to house 30-plus utilities plus suppliers at our Mesquite warehouse to keep those relationships growing.
So when there's an emergency that happens, do they... Do you reach out to a specific couple and say, I need this from you? Or is there like a group email that goes out and it's first come, first serve?
Both.
Know, as far as independence.
Yeah.
Kind of what it is, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's both. You know, like with Garcane, they typically reach out to a utility that they can count on that's got, you know, whatever line. Last summer it was that big fire that burned down their transmission lines. So they want companies that can rebuild transmission structure. So they're going to reach out to those companies they can reach on, that rely on. But it's been, yeah, an email blast to the entire group that they can just say, hey, help is needed or materials are needed. What can you provide for us, essentially?
And through the NREA, that's one of the things that's important as we enter fire season. When Jack and I attend the meetings, there is a committee through NREA that works on the mutual aid. And so, and Dane from Lincoln County has led that up. And one of the important things is that every year we go through and update our contacts, and I am not the contact. Kyle is the contact. He knows what trucks we have available to roll and what would be, he would be in contact with me. But I say, don't call me at 3 o'clock in the morning because there's a wildfire. I'm just going to call Kyle. And so we cut all of that middleman out and call the people who actually can respond and say, we don't have the help, or we have a truck that's, you know, red tagged right now, something like that.
Yeah, and it's, this agreement is in place to call on. It doesn't require us to respond. Like, we're going to, obviously, Melissa and I discuss what's at our door right now today and make sure we have the staff ready. We have the trucks that are ready. That's not going to leave Overton Power District stranded. So, and that's well documented throughout these agreements. You can see on the right the geographical area that we are able to call on from Idaho, Utah, Nevada, and it didn't show it, but parts of Arizona as well. Best practices, IPSA, NREA, all those different things create those relationships for us that are so valuable that we're just easily able to call on directly or send out the email blast like you described. The most recent time that we had help come and help us out was the 2022 system-wide outage. At Tortoise Substation, we had that pole fire there, and Dixie Power and Lincoln County Power responded with help, and it was incredible, right? Like, our staff obviously could have tackled that project, but it wouldn't have been as quickly as we wanted to get done. So Dixie showed up with their 110-foot bucket plus 4 or 5 manpower. Lincoln County came all the way down and was here quick. They were here before most of our staff was there because they're loading material and heading that way. So it's just incredible, just the neighbors we have. And then what's most incredible about this was the fact that neither of those utilities even called on the mutual aid agreement. They just did it from their hearts. Like, they didn't require payment, require reimbursement out of that. So it's incredible neighbors that we have.
We should add, Dixie is amazing, but we happen to be feeding them their scenic area at the time. At the time. So I was like, how'd they know? Well, because they were out of power because of us too. So, but they had a brand new truck that they sent with 5 guys, and that outage ended up being a 12 and a half, 13-hour outage, and they were there the entire time.
Without Lincoln that County truck, we've been hours longer,
And so. Lincoln County beat NV Energy. Yeah. They came from their... I think at that time maybe they were still at Castleton. I don't know if they had their new building or not, but came with loaded trucks, and they beat NV Energy staff to give us the visual opening. That, so,
So, incredible neighbors that we continue to work on relationships with and prepare. OPD 5 is prepared. This is something like we discussed. We periodically update and visit on so that we make sure we're not seeing any holes in these agreements. We keep those relationships strong with our neighbors, and then we practice in-house emergency response to these extreme levels of outages. So it gives us the opportunity to in-house be prepared and think about who we're going to call in this situation or that situation. So we're doing everything we can in the meantime to stay prepared.
One thing that I think is really important too that came up, that the and our staff, Kyle worked on this mutual aid agreement with the rest of NREA. They have a form that you fill out for every employee that you're sending. So if we're sending up 4 linemen, every one of those men is going to show up and give their leadership a form that says where are they at in their training, what vehicles and equipment are they trained to run. And then one of the things that we say is we would never dispatch loan trucks from other entities to go out and just send them to work. They would always be dispatched with an OPD5 employee because they don't know our system, and we wouldn't allow our guys to just be dispatched either. That's one of the things that came from best practices, is that the home utility has to be running those jobs, and then they just have trained professionals that's helping them do that work or use the equipment.
That's all I have for you, unless you have any questions or comments.
Thank you very much, Kyle. Now we say our prayers and eat our vitamins that we're into fire season and we don't need it. So.
Absolutely.
Yes.
We'll keep practicing, but don't put us to the test.
Any public comments?
There was no one in the ski.
Okay. Any trustee comments?
Well, we're coming up for the summer. Are we prepped for it? I know with Arrowhead down and finishing up the work up in Painted Hills, are we going to have enough capacity in the downtown Mesquite area?
We are getting that Painted Hills online. That was a huge help. Without that, we probably would be scrambling. But yeah, we got that online, and we're looking good. I think last month Shane, I think he did a presentation of how they dispatched the power around town. So yeah, they've been working hard at getting everything ready, and they're watching it, and if anything looks like it's going to go where it shouldn't, they're ready to move that power around. So, yeah, we're looking good.
I do know that the data center conversation seems to be gaining speed in Mesquite anyway. Makes me a little bit nervous about that whole thing, just that are we ready, are we capable? And you mentioned something about the city. New business coming in, whether it's 5 megawatt, 10, et cetera. you know, they're looking at doubling their population in 20 years. You know, and that's just talking about population, not necessarily data centers or businesses or whatever. So it does make me a little bit nervous on, you know, the expansion, transmission lines, all those types of things. And really what it comes down to for me is, what's the price of energy? We just talked about energy increases. You know, all that's going to play a part in that. And nobody knows what that looks like necessarily, but it's a little bit nerving, I think, that the hydrology of it is not looking great, although maybe they'll strike a deal with California and do their
desalinization and we'll all be saved.
Hallelujah. You know what I mean? But I mean, at least they're looking at something. They should look at that 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know,
let's not get Vernon started on that.
I'm on my way down here. I popped up an article, and not that I'm supposed to do that when I drive, but, you know, somebody posted on Facebook that the data center was already approved in Mesquite, which is not correct.
Correct.
And so that's
it also said that it was connected to OPD-5.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here we go. So it's just interesting.
One of the things that I wanted to make sure that I shared with the city manager, because she's not supposed to be an expert on providing power. That's our role. But I wanted her to have a frame of reference. And so a couple of things that I told her to think about is Crown Cork, that came into our service territory, employs about 150 people. They work around the clock, and they're about a 4.5 megawatt load. So just say 5 for ease of it.
Visually,
yes. Typically, you can serve about 500 homes on 1 megawatt of power. So what I explained to her is we anticipate about a 3% load growth year over year in our service territory and in Mesquite. And so our transmission is built to handle that growth, as is our transformers. And so when you see loads that are growing at 1.5, 2, every once in a while we have a 4 or 5 megawatt load, which we haven't had a 5 megawatt load added to our system for many, many years. Our system load growth, that's normal. But when you start chunking that away in 20, 30, and 50 megawatt increments, that changes the ability for that growth to happen over 10 years. And so it isn't that we can't serve that load. It means that it requires extra transmission and extra capacity far sooner, and those entities then have to pay for that. And so you get to choose. Do you want 1 20-megawatt data center, or do you want 4 Crown Corks come into your service territory? It's the same energy and capacity needs. Now, I realize there's not 4 Crown Corks beating on the door wanting to come to Mesquite, but that's for them to decide, not for us to decide. But all of that needs to be thought of, and we don't expect that the city understands the difference between 1 megawatt and 20 megawatts. That's not their realm, but that's why it's important that we're always at that table. And I'll just say on the record, there was many, many years that Overton Power was not included in those conversations with the city of Mesquite, and recently we are. That relationship has healed very much, and I think with new leadership and new direction, that's going very good, and so we are included in those conversations.
I just hope all entities, water, power, city, whatever the case may be, in county and on this side, you know, dramatic changes that can happen.
Yep.
If we're not all on the same page.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of my point.
Yep. I agree. And you guys will be getting calls. I got stopped in the grocery store. How are you going to stop that data center? I'm like, there isn't a data center yet. And it's not my job to stop it. So.
They had Wes Adams on TV last night, and he's been meeting with the Switch outfit that's been there quite a few years. But they're wanting to put a big one up there, like in his North Vegas compound up there. And it's a big one, like Switch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Of course, if the energy panels.
Yes. Yeah. And it won't affect our capacity, Jack. You got nothing to worry about.
All right. So we're down to N. Approval of next board meeting Wednesday, August 19th at Mesquite Boardroom.
I'll make a motion to accept that date, Wednesday, August 19th, 2026 at 3 p.m. in the Mesquite boardroom.
I'll second that at 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
Okay.
Want to vote?
Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you.
Okay. Hallelujah.
Hey, can I say on record, it is 420.
Ooh,
it's 420. Now, I'm going to say that we have executive session, so don't get too happy.
Oh.
But it's 420, and I'm going to try to keep executive sessions short. So. That's right. Bob, Chad, and Mike are gone, and look at how we just whipped right through things.
Here.
So, yeah. Can we have a 2-minute break, please, before? Okay.
I just finished with Monster.
Okay.